Thank you very much. So before I start and trying to explain to you why I built a ISP for running Tor stuff, it would be a good idea to understand the background of the internet in the UK over the past few years. I promise you it won't take too long. So in 2004, British Telecom, which is one of the largest incumbent ISPs, introduced a technology they called CleanFeed. It was a technology that had a noble aim, they claimed. And the idea was is to prevent people from accidentally or mistakenly stumbling on some rather, you know, extremely unsavoury material. And as far as technology goes, it is quite a clever technology. We have a non-profit named the Internet Watch Foundation, and they take reports of URLs of this unsavoury material. They check it to make sure whether it is indeed illegal, and then they resolve the domain to an IP address, curate those IP addresses into a list, and provide them to BT. If you're browsing the internet normally, you're going around, their routers will check the IP that you're trying to reach. And if it's not on the list of IPs they don't want you to reach, your IPs carry on going, or sorry, your packets carry on going to the website unimpeded. However, if one of the IPs you're trying to reach happens to be on their list that they don't like, then your packets are transparently routed to a proxy. If it's not SSL, then it will try and evaluate the full URL to see whether that URL is something that has been reported to them. If it has been reported, they will spoof a 404 or just drop the session or do something else, you know, try and deter you from visiting that URL. And some of us in the Internet Freedom Society, things like that, we were concerned. It's a noble idea for the technology, but obviously it's the very thin end of a wedge for things that could go horribly, horribly wrong. And we gave these drastic predictions of how terrible this will be with state-level censorship and things like that. And then nothing happened for a while. But then in 2011, the MPA, the Motion Picture Association of America, went to our High Court in the UK and they said, oh, there's this website, Newsbins, it's a Usenet site. They've got material of our customers and they're infringing copyright. We want you to block it because you have a technology that can block traffic. And the Honourable Justice Arnold looked at the case, and he agreed that Usenet, Newsbins was indeed infringing a particular part of UK law, and said, well, yes, you have this technology. This technology can block IP addresses, and so you will use it to block this website. And we were like, okay, things are starting to speed up now. And speed up they did. In 2012, the MPA went again to the High Court, and they said, right, you've managed to block Newsbins and we've seen a drop in traffic. Now we want you to block the Pirate Bay. Now, by this point, lots of ISPs in the UK were using CleanFeed or equivalents of. And by just targeting a court order against these ISPs here, 95% of the UK was now blocked from being able to reach the Pirate Bay, Newsbins, and an awful lot of other sites. So June 2013 comes along, we had the Snowden revelations, and also I don't need to explain those to everyone here, but we found out that a lot of our ISPs, BT included, were doing things at the behest of GCHQ and stuff that we weren't particularly happy about. July 2013, things get a little bit better. The little point there has gone yellow. A 20-year-old student launches a website called immunicity.org, and this website was quite clever in a way. It resurrected something called the proxy auto configuration file, and this is a little piece of JavaScript that takes a list of URLs. When your browser makes a request for a domain, it checks the pack file. If it matches, it then says, no, don't go direct, use this proxy. All of a sudden, by simply pasting this immunicity URL into your browser, all of a sudden you can get back to Pirate Bay and all things like that. Got picked up by Torrent Freak and lots of other news sites. Everyone reveled in the fact that, you know, obviously, internet rooted around censorship again, and things were happy for a while. January 2014. Those ISPs I mentioned earlier enable something called parental filtering. The UK government deciding that children need to be protected from pornography, gambling, opinions. they shouldn't be able to reach parts of the internet. The internet's bad and children shouldn't be able to do it. You know, they didn't think maybe we should educate parents or suggest things like having the family computer in the living room or something like that. No, it's much easier to have state-level mandated ISP centralized censorship. Now, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to July of 2014, and I'll jump back again. So after 6 months, unsurprisingly, nobody wanted their internet censored. Quite surprisingly, lots of things were blocked and people didn't want it. The only outlier here is a company called TalkTalk. Now, they had enabled parental filtering 2 years prior, as they thought it was of a good value add, that customers would move to their broadband in order to have this parental filtering and this antivirus and all the rest of it. And so they had an uptake of about 36%. Now, whether the government was embarrassed by this really low take-up or something like that, we're not quite sure. But they decided the way to fix this was not to accept that filtering doesn't work, but to say you now have to have an unavoidable choice. When you buy a broadband connection in the UK, by default, it is enabled with parental filtering. And that will block everything from gambling to social media to alcohol, pornography, etc., etc., etc. So if you, as an adult, want to be able to reach these websites, you literally have to go and ask your ISP. And there'll be a little fun bit on that later on. So we drop back again, back to June 2014. EFF, I mean, I'm sure you all know, launches the Tor Challenge. And if you've read my bio in the pamphlet, you'll see that I was one of the people that tried to take up the Tor Challenge. And the idea was that they wanted people to try and run relays and strengthen the network. And if you saw any of the State of the Onion reports or things like that, we now have 7,000 relays, and that's pretty good. 1,637 of them, give or take, were from the Tor Challenge. I had some problems with the Tor Challenge, and I'll get onto that just, in a little bit. July 2014, the Open Rights Group, which is sort of a UK equivalent of the EFF, relaunched their website blocked.org.uk. And we were concerned that all this filtering that was going on, not only was it being done in secret, the lists were all secret, it was run by proprietary companies and things like that that Corey mentioned earlier, but it was also over-blocking as well as under-blocking. And when we launched the website, we also crowdfunded and released a video. If you'll bear with me, and if the AV gods will allow it, I'd like to show that to you.
Department of Dirty, how can I help?
Thank God, finally, a real human being.
What is the dirty nature of your inquiry today?
Well, I'm trying to download a recipe
for spotted dick. I'm getting the message.
This web page has been blocked because it may contain
inappropriate material. If you
really want to access this page, call blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. I just need to ask you a couple of questions.
Oh, yes, of course. My address is...
Oh, no. We've already got your
address.
How often do you like to access dirty material?
Often, very often, or all the time.
Excuse me? How dirty would you say your browsing habits are on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being pretty... you know what 10 is.
I just want
to use the internet.
Yeah, well, this isn't the internet, is it, sir? This is the dirty internet.
I really need this recipe.
Okay, all right. You can have your recipe.
All you need to say is... I
really want to use the dirty internet.
I will not!
Okay. Now, about these spots on your member, sir, could you describe them to me? I might need to transfer you to the Department of Health.
Department of Dirty, how can I help?
So, I mean, as amusing as it is actually quite literally true. You'll have to go onto a web control panel or phone up customer services and say, I would not like... be filtered, I would like to access pornography or gambling and things like that. And obviously quite some people were concerned that they were being put on lists and stuff like that. So blog.org.uk itself, just to give a little bit of background, much like the Open Observatory of Network Interference, but at a very much smaller scale, we have a bunch of Raspberry Pis. We bought subscriptions to these ISPs, and the bottom ones are mobile. And we then, you can then submit a URL to blog.org.uk. We will send it to the Raspberry Pis, they'll crawl it, and if they get a block page, they report that back to you. We then get this giant database of who's blocking what, and every so often we will recrawl it. And when we first ran it, for the results for launch day, we found that some of these ISPs were blocking the NSPCC and Childline. These are websites, charities for supporting children. But Pornhub was allowed. It showed perfectly that there's some massive overblocking and some underblocking as well. And just as 2014 was looking good, the person who was running immunity.org was arrested, and his websites were seized and his servers were seized. And the UK police have now decided that proxies are criminal. They are fraud, somehow. And this guy is still in court at the moment, He's looking at quite a lengthy jail sentence at the moment. So things in the internet in the UK aren't looking particularly great. So in February 2015, Brasswarn Communications launched as a form of ISP. So you might look at all of that and think to yourself, well, getting into the ISP game seems like a bit of a silly idea. Why on earth would you do that? When the news of the Immunicity arrests happened, I was over in Vegas for another conference that I'm sure you all know, and I was pretty annoyed. And so I had a rough idea from what the police had said in their press releases. I had an idea of how they were applying the legislation they used. So I started writing this thing that I called Packet Flaggen that was on routingpacketsisnotacrime.uk, hopefully protecting myself. And the idea was is that you would have to select, you'd have to input the URLs that you wanted to proxy, and then it would create a pack file customized to you. So I wasn't saying, if you want to go to this website, use my service. I was saying, if you want to get to something that you can't get to, use this. And I issued an FOA against the police, and I talked to some solicitor friends. And when it launched, it got picked up by Torrent Freak, you know, the usual, Immunicity's back, and blah, blah, blah. And I made a mistake. I read the internet comments, and this one stood out to me. This guy is going to get fucked by the UK state. Infuriating, but likely. Now, luckily, that was 2 years ago, and I'm still here, so it looks like I got guests right, maybe. Anyway, secondly, EFF Tour Challenge. I mentioned previously that I had some issues. I looked at the Tour Wiki, and obviously we've got a problem, as it was mentioned in the State of the Onion. We have an awful lot of people that are running relays on ASs that already have hundreds, if not thousands, of relays. So I tried digging out smaller companies that weren't currently running relays, and then I'd get shut down. Even with middle relays, there's a email anti-spam list somewhere. I think it's a German one. I can't remember its name. And they will block the entire /24 if they detect a middle relay in that network. So if you're a small ISP and you've only got 1,000 addresses, if someone blacklists 255 of them, you're going to be annoyed. You're going to kick the guy off running a middle relay. Even some of the ISPs and hosters that are considered good and cooperative will still suspend a site, a server if it gets an abuse request until you say why the abuse request happened, and eventually they'll suspend it for longer and longer and longer. And I was losing money because I was buying some of these servers in advance, a year in advance to try and cut the costs, and they'll be like, well, you've breached the AUP, not our problem. So that was a shame. And finally, censorship annoys me a lot, as you probably can tell, being tracking all this stuff. And every so often you see these things about someone's blog on WordPress being shut down because someone used DMCA to shut down criticism, something like that. Someone's Facebook account gets blocked because they've put a picture of themselves breastfeeding or something. It's ridiculous. It annoys me greatly. So I've always used co-location on my own servers to host my blog and stuff like that because at the end of the day, it takes an awful lot more for a hosting provider to decide to shut you down than it would Twitter or Facebook or anything, but they still can. It's totally within their right to do so. Anyone that enjoys Futurama will hopefully get this reference. I thought the best way to fix this is I'll build my own damn ISP. And then I tried to work out how I'd do that. So hopefully, it's going to be a bit dry, I'm afraid, if this bit hasn't been already, and show you how to you two can try and build an ISP, and it's not going to be cheap, so just bear that in mind. On the Tor Wiki, there is a small entry that suggests you build your own legal entity. It gives you certain liability, or excludes you from certain liabilities, such as financial liabilities. So you sign contracts, and you say, I want a fibre connection for X amount of time, and if for whatever reason you have to shut the company down, then they can't take my house, they can't take my car. They'll have to sue the company. If the company's got no money, so be it. Limited legal liability. If a Tor exit causes an issue, then hopefully I can't get sued. They'll have to sue the company, and that will end there. To create a company, you go to what we call in the UK the company's house, and you have to give them some information. Articles of association, basically some boilerplate, and explaining what your company is intending to do. And it is quite an interesting one, going to a bank and stuff, and explaining, trying to explain Tor and anonymity to banks and company's house and things. And you define the structure. You provide an annual return, which tells the company's house and the government what the structure of your company is, who the officers are, who the directors are, and things like that. And you have to provide accounts, how much money you're spending and how much tax you owe the government. It costs about £20. Pre-Brexit, I'd have said, it's about $30. This weekend is turning out to be quite expensive for beer for me. So, you've got your company, you've got your separate legal entity, and you want to be a what we call a local internet registry. And the way you do this is you go to a regional internet registry. The regional internet registries have been assigned a big chunk of IP addresses from the IANA, Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. For Europe, it's RIPE NCC. For the US, it's ARIN, Latin America, LACNIC, and Asia Pacific, APNIC. Because I'm in the UK, because my servers are in the UK, I went to RIPE. To become a local internet registry with RIPE, you need a copy of your company's incorporation documents, the thing that says you are a company, your proof that you are a legal company, a billing address, a real billing address, and names and email addresses of the people in your company. So I am billing, I am admin, I am everything. And again, a big chunk of cash, €3,600, which is about €4,000, I think. 1,200 of that is payable each year in maintenance fees. And this is before we even get started. Like I said, whilst you could create your own ISP, it is not a cheap endeavor. I'm not getting a new car for quite a long time. So done. You get your letter back. You say, congratulations, thank you. You are now a local internet registry. You are an ISP. You are a part of the internet. Great. Yeah, you need IPs. I came to the game quite late. As you all know, the internet's run out of IPs. No more left. They're all gone. So RIPE has introduced what it calls the last /8. Because it's not gone. They still have an entire /8 left. But they'll only give you 1,024 addresses. That's not really a lot to run an ISP on, but it's a start. There's a catch, though. Not only have we run out of IPv4, no one uses it anymore. It's deprecated. It's legacy. So you can't get IPv4 straight away. You have to get some IPv6 first. And then once you've got your IPv6, then you can ask for some IPv4. Now, some of you in the room might have remembered that recently Microsoft, spent an awful lot of money. They bought a big bunch of IPs. I think it was either $11 an IP or $18 an IP. And if you've been following the numbers, this is roughly about $4 an IP if you do it this way. And yes, some people realized if they just incorporated a company, got a /22, then they can transfer it back to themselves, only $4 an IP. Funnily enough, RIPE worked this one out. And not long after, they then said, no, you cannot do this anymore. So that is it. You've got 1,024 addresses, or you pay incredible amounts of money. Now, at this point, I'm assuming you've already chosen a co-location provider or a VPS provider and things like that. And you can say to them, here are my IP addresses. Please announce them to the internet for me. There's a problem with that. You're still totally at their behest. They will show as the origin of your IP addresses. Yes, they are your IPs, and you are responsible for them. But they will show as being the originator. And so they may still choose to shut you down, if they so wish. So what you really want to do is get what we call an ASN. I'm sure you've all heard of AS numbers, or at least seen them in some sort of context. It stands for Autonomous System Number. It's just a small number that identifies you and your small corner of the internet. It allows you to participate in BGP, the Border Gateway Protocol, the glue of the internet. If any of you were here at the last Hope, I think there was this talk about how that can be undermined and all sorts of other craziness. But the thing that's important is it allows for multiple transit providers. So you can have connections with Cogent, with Level 3, with BT, with Verizon, all things like that. And for the most part, they won't interfere with what you transit because they want to keep their mere conduit protections and stuff like that. And I think, as far as I'm aware, there's only been a couple of cases where all of the transit providers for a given AS have collaborated to shut them all peering down at one time. And that was some form of spamming thing in Europe. It's usually quite rare. So, we now have our IPs. But, yay, exactly, it's exciting, kind of. Unfortunately, we've now got to the really dry bit, housekeeping. I'm sure some of you guys have done Whois and got a bunch of information about those IPs of yours, or the IP that you're looking at. As an ISP, it's your responsibility to fill that information in. So a quick look at an inetnum object. RIPE have decreed that if you have IPs on the internet, you now must publish an abuse address. You must have some way of people getting in touch with you and telling you if there's something wrong on your network. So the first thing you notice, you'll have to make sure that you publish an abuse address on email and be responsive to any requests you get. And we'll go into that in a little bit. Then there's the inetnum itself. It lists the range of the IP addresses you're using. And for this particular purpose, I've assigned an entire /24 to my Tor exits. For use with Tor exits. And I had this great idea. I thought, If I put in the description field, which can be as many lines as you want, and I tell people ahead of time, these are Tor relays, Tor exits, and this is the exit policy. So if you see anything dodgy, you can do the who is and go, oh, right, look, it's a Tor. And there's even a URL telling you more information about Tor. And I thought to myself, you know, people will look at this and be like, oh, it's Tor, I understand Tor, and they won't send me an email moaning. No. Finally, assign status. You can say whether these addresses are public aggregatable, whether they're provider independent, whether they're part of your own infrastructure, and stuff like that. For the most part, it's not that important. And there's a root object at the bottom. This has two important things. First one is the description, the name of your ISP. That's not particularly important, but for me, there was something quite cool. The first time that I went to Globe and I had a look at one of my relays, or I had Orbot and I looked at the circuit list, and my ISP, not only was it my node, but it was actually my ISP that was showing up in the circuit. It's quite a fun little thing. It's like, oh, that's quite cool. And then finally, another technical bit, the origin. This is the AS, is my AS number. This is telling other people that if you see these IP addresses coming, originating from somebody else's AS, something funky is going on. Those IPs should only be announced by my routers saying these things. And we'll go into a little bit more detail about that later. And we all know the internet is serious business. And the RIPE database contains things, root objects, and PGP signed information about how you connect to other routers and stuff like that. It also has this, a poem object. But don't worry, this is an upgrade from the limerick object we used to have. I'm not sure if I should read the poem, but yes. No, I'm not. In my voice, okay, right, okay. So, BGP is a protocol smart. On Cisco's, it's really an art. If you screw up your med and your router goes dead, then you're better off with a restart. Not my poem, some random thing from 2005. Anyway, so, we've got more housekeeping to do. I'm really sorry, but you came to the talk. Reverse DNS. We've told people what these IPs, the larger information about these IPs. You might want to throw some specific information, forward DNS, reverse DNS, things like that. And again, it's quite easy for IPv4, because I've only got 4/24s, and they split quite nicely, so I can create 4 zones for those things. And I tell the RIPE database that if you want to look up the reverse DNS for these, then you want to use these name servers that... quite blurry, isn't it? But anyway, you tell the right database and that upgrades and it sends everything up to the root name servers and it's all quite cool. Configuring bind, again, is really simple, as you can imagine. Only you use bind. Reverse DNS is as simple as doing forward DNS. It's just that it's, you know, you're talking to the root name servers and stuff. Well, you do that for forward. Anyway, OpenBSD caching name server daemon is even more simple than bind. It's just like 6 lines, transfers it, and it's all cool. IPv6. IPv6 is big. I got /29, which is like some like a quadrillion /32s or something ridiculous. 8. I lied. And again, we can list these in a set of zones. And a reverse IPv6 record looks like that. It's quite big. So I've got a bit of a problem, though. That's how many addresses are in a /32. Are there any mathematicians that want to read that out for me? No? I'm not even going to try. So I can imagine that if I tried putting in a default like unused dot RAS1Coms or whatever in bind for all of those, it'd explode. So I'm only going to put in like 6 for the relays and things like that. So cool, we've done the housekeeping, we're done. All the boring stuff, it's gone. We've got nowhere to go. No one knows about us. I've set the IP addresses on my servers. I've done who is, I've done reverse DNS, but no one knows how to get to me. So we need to talk to our colo providers, to transit providers, to other ISPs and ask them to connect us, to connect to our routers. Or we run a fiber over to IXP peering, which is where all the other ISPs gather in one. I think in the US it's commonly called a carrier hotel, something like that, where all the ISPs come together, connect their routers directly to a switch, and you peer with each other to cut down your actual transit costs. It's very, very popular in Europe. And I think there's some issues in the US because I think Netflix and somebody got in a bit of a spat recently, wasn't it? Anyway, was it Comcast, was it? So, more housekeeping, I lied. You need to create an autnum object in the database. And this is a way for you to tell other routers and other ASNs how you want to talk to the internet and how you want to learn about the internet. So, for example, with Comcast, I might want to talk to Comcast and accept Comcast's IPs and all of Comcast's customers' IPs. But Netflix, I only want Netflix to tell me about Netflix. And likewise, I want to tell the people that I'm connected to that I'm only going to be announcing my IPs up to you. Jumping into OpenBSD again, config for BGP, really nice and simple. My AIS number, a router ID, the networks I'm assigning, and IP information about my neighbors. Restart that, and then, boom, host all of the things. It's the only meme in the thing, I apologize, I had to do it. And it's cool. The first time that I got, there's a service called BGPmon, and it will monitor the internet for BGP announcements. And when I got that first email saying, you know, these IPs are now visible in UK, Germany, France, it just spread, and it was a cool feeling. And I was able to run my relays. The top four are exits. They're on my network, and they're HSDIRs and all the rest of it. And the other ones are relays that survived when I first did the EFF Tor challenge. And so that's the process of becoming an ISP. Then we've got this the thing of being an ISP. It's all well and cool. You've announced your IPs, you've got your servers running, and your Tor exits are shifting traffic, and it's all a bit cool. You're quite excited and pumped, and no one can tell you what to do anymore. But you're going to need some equipment. This is some equipment. It's an awful lot of money of equipment. It's about £300,000 worth. Funnily enough, when I said that £3,500 of money to create this ISP was a lot of money for me and I'm never going to buy a new car again, I ain't buying this. I'm buying these. PC Engines APU, so like a little single board computer, three NICs, three Intel NICs, 4 gigs of RAM, a SSD mSATA card running OpenBSD. My servers, much as they are, Intel NUCs. Again, quad-core CPU, 16 gigs of RAM, SSDs, they pull absolutely no power, can fit a load of them in a quarter cab. And switches, oh, and again, running OpenBSD. And switches, I could get some cool Cisco or Brocade thing with layer 3 features and VLANing, or I can get those nice cheap blue net gears and have a stack of them spare for when it goes pop. You don't have to spend money that much money now once you've done this bit. And then handling abuse. So as I mentioned, I had a lot of problems with my servers getting shut down by other providers. And sometimes it was really annoying. It would be simply just one person or one automated response saying there was some directory recursion. And so they shut down the thing, just simple that. Or I got added to a blacklist because it's just simply running a middle relay. And as it happens, there are no strict rules about how you handle abuse. It's your network and it's up to you how you deal with things. I've been keeping a sort of rough tally of what I get. 90% of what I've received so far is just automated. There's web application firewalls that will literally go, oh my God, we're under attack, because someone did 15 GET requests in 3 seconds. And they'll send me an email about that. I'm not interested. 9% are manual. And these are, some of these have been quite interesting. I've had a bank contact me. I've had people running businesses that have had issues, stuff like that. And usually it's very polite, explain to them Tor, and most of the time they will accept the situation and they'll leave me alone. One time I had some guy threaten to call Interpol and go full crazy, and I invited them to do so because at that point there's not much I can do. I tried explaining the situation to them, explained that I can't control it, explained Tor, and they were still like, you have to stop this, you have to tell us who did it. I can't. And 1% is spam. You publish an IP address, an email address publicly in like something like the RipeDB, you're going to get spam. I said earlier, I don't want to allow abusive behavior. I don't want my network to be considered this evil place where anything goes or anything like that. But some of the manual complaints that I've had turned out WordPress, admin, or vulnerable plugins and stuff like that. It's like, it's the internet. No, I don't know what to do with that. I had one person that had I think it was a Dropbox or Google Doc, and they'd set it to anyone with this URL, and then complained after they tweeted it that people had used my exit to crawl it. I can't really help you there, mate. I've had nothing that I would consider legitimate abuse issues yet. Nothing seriously bad that I would consider that would make me rethink hosting exits or spending the money to be able to do this sort of stuff. And then the Investigatory Powers Bill came along. Messaging, I'd say in the year and a half, probably less than 60, 70 emails. It's been quite low. My exits only do about 10 to 12 megabit each. I mentioned that, you know, the IXP stuff, I don't quite yet have a connection to an IXP, which means I'm having to pay committed data rates and peak burst for the moment. So transit is quite expensive for me. So whilst I can run exits, and obviously, like I say, it's about 40 to 60 megabits so far, I will make that larger as I'm able to get IXP peering. But yeah, it's not an awful lot of traffic, so it probably reduces the amount of requests I get. Investigatory Powers Bill. This is a new law that the UK government's trying to bring in. So Snowden's releases showed that our government was interpreting laws written in the 80s, specifically and amusingly, the Telecommunications Act 1984, I think it was. And they were like, well, these things apply to the internet. We'll use them. And then they realized that the way that they've interpreted some of these laws may not be totally okay. So they created this new one. And it covers everything they've previously been doing, bulk malware and stuff, bulk surveillance, all these things. They said, yeah, we're going to do it. It's in the law now. Can't do anything about it. They've added one extra thing. The idea of internet connection records. All ISPs in the UK, if issued a notice to do so, will have to record everything that you do online. Every message you send, every website you connect to, pretty much every TCP, UDP, and anything else that you do. They want to know if you've been using Twitter, if you've been using YouTube, how long for, when, and all this sort of stuff. They haven't quite worked out how we're going to do that yet, but that's what they want to do. And I apologise for this giant wall of text. It can basically be summed up as the who, what, where, and when. They want to be able to say if you were using Twitter back in January, or if you sent a message via Facebook, or if you were on a Skype call, or if you uploaded something to Dropbox. They don't necessarily need to know what it was, because, you know, they're doing us a favour by not asking us to break SSL somehow. But they do want us to store... Obviously, it probably wouldn't apply to me, I have no customers, but they do want ISPs to store everything that you do. If you come to the UK and you're roaming on your phone, you go to the hotel will record that in your room you went to your company VPN, or you did a DNS lookup against this name server, or you did this or you did that. And bearing in mind, obviously, you'll be subject to the parental filtering, whatever else they're doing on top of all of this. And I got quite annoyed by this idea. And I came up... Came up with an idea of this Onion DSL. And actually, the idea came to me after one of the US judges, I believe, has recently said that Tor users have no expectation of privacy because the first hop is public, which I thought was a bit of a strange one. I think I've got that right, haven't I? No? All right. And so I thought, as an ISP, I could create a DSL connection that goes to a private WAN, no router, for a next hop or no natting, but just a Tor bridge. So your modem would establish DSL as normal. You'd get a private RFC 1918 address or the RFC 6598, which is 164/8. And there's no router. You can't escape out of this network. You can't accidentally screw up your Anonymous box or, you know, your Tor config or your SOX config and accidentally leak ClearNet stuff because there's nowhere to go. You'll only have a Tor bridge. You configure your browser or your router and do whatever you need to do, and then you can get to the internet. I can't see what you're doing, and nobody else can know, hopefully, traffic correlation aside, who you are and what you're doing. And when I had this idea, I got excited and I drew this little picture, and I tweeted it. And you can see here you've got your XDSL modem, then you've got the digital subscriber line access multiplexer, which is a cool piece of kit that turns your analog DSL signals into ATM or Ethernet, ships it across to the broadband routing access service, I think that stands for. And then you're inside the ISP network. And this is all cool, and I was excited about the idea. And then I realized that I don't have copper into people's homes or this very expensive equipment that turns your DSL into Ethernet Does anyone here remember the old RJ21 telco cables? Yeah, weird things. Only on 10100 and stuff like that, but anyway. I borrowed this picture from Vodafone, from one of their wholesale things. The QR code down there is the original. I don't want to steal things, but I just didn't have time to draw a picture as pretty as this. And this is wholesale DSL, so this is what I would do. I'd have somebody else already has the copper in the ground, already has the DSLAMs, and already has the ATM, or the national ATM network. And what they would do is we would create an L2TP, Layer 2 Tunneling Protocol bridge, between my router and their national infrastructure. And then we would create a PPP session from your modem all the way through into my network. And one of the things of L2TP is we can layer it on top of IPsec. So even the wholesale DSL provider couldn't see what was going on. Not that it'd matter, it'd be a Tor bridge anyway. But double encryption, twice as safe. That isn't showing up very well, is it? In the UK, we have BT exchanges. These are our local points of presence for DSL and stuff like that, and telephone exchanges. So your home would be connected to the BT exchange. BT exchange would then backhaul fiber to a wholesale point of presence. And then I'd be able to get a fiber connection from my carrier, or from my colocation provider into the wholesale POP, and then I could actually do this. And it'd be expensive, but it'd be quite a good way to tell the government they're idiots. And that when the government tries to launch new laws in the UK, they have a consultation process, or a committee process, and they invite people to submit evidence saying whether the law is good, whether it's bad, bits that need to be changed, things like that. Unsurprisingly, everybody, or a lot of ISPs in the UK, wrote in to object to a lot of these things. And several of us told them that ICRs, aside from the privacy aspects and all the rest of it, they're just unworkable. People that want to protect their privacy, or people that don't want to be spied on, they know about VPNs, they know about SSH, they know about SOC proxies, they know about Tor, and they'll use them. Or they'll use disposable SIMs or things like that. And ICRs will only capture the naive and the innocent. And we really don't see what the point of that is. I digress. When I had this idea, I created a local proof of concept. It doesn't look very good, not look very cool, but there's some Cisco 2600s acting as the LAC, the LNS, little APU1D running as a Tor bridge. And then this laptop running as a PPOE client and a domestic grade router. Logically, looks like this. Again, not particularly exciting. But, config. When I publish the slides, if you've got any network emulators at home or anything like that, you'll be able to copy this config and test it for yourselves. It worked. No public routing, no public DNS, no ability to NAT the outside world. And yet you get a full working Tor connection. Exactly. I was surprised. I expected it would work, but when it actually worked for the first time, I was pretty impressed. So, just before I came here, I finished talking with a wholesale DSL provider back in the UK, and we have a provisional agreement to try and start rolling this out. So, as much as it is a silly idea and a silly way to protest internet connection records and mass surveillance and things like that, I'm going to try and make it work because no one else is. So, yeah. Any questions?
How many pounds a month for an onion DSL connection?
am I still there? Yeah. Don't know yet. Looking at wholesale and stuff like that, I'm expecting around about £60 to £80 a month, which isn't cheap, but that should cover enough for me to cover the wholesale, up the my commits with interconnects and stuff like that. That's what it's roughly looking at. Don't hold me to it because I haven't fully run all the numbers yet. It's more of an idea that I'm running with than I fully spec'd out and have a business plan to take for a loan or something. Anything else? Oh, sorry.
Because of the infrastructure setup in the UK, you can provide service inside the entire country, right?
Indeed. So the interesting way the UK works, I suppose it's the same with any DSL provider. We have, if I just go back to So these, the ADSL access network and then this cloud on the right-hand side, we have this idea of the wholesale DSL super pops. And the DSLAMs and all that sort of technology exist on street corners, in towns. They then backhaul to cities. Cities then backhaul down to London and Edinburgh and stuff like that. And it's got this, it's got the ATM networks or the Ethernet super networks. And they break out into points of presence. The big carrier hotels are in London, Edinburgh and Dublin and stuff like that. So I can have my single small co-location facility down south near London, and I can hook up a customer in Scotland or Wales or something like that. And effectively, there's no extra infrastructure cost to me. It will cost me the same for the underlying infrastructure to run a cable 15 foot down the road as it will 300 miles, technically.
Slightly different product set, but it does exist. Have you also looked at doing the same sort of thing with 4G?
I have. As it happens, the wholesale DSL provider that I'm working with or hoping to work with also offers a 3G product, not 4G yet, it's a 3G product, where they will terminate the PPP connection when you dial up to the same LNS that you want to use for the L2TP for DSL. So they'll L2TP your PPP for 3G session. And as it turns out, that's even cheaper than other things. And
so you can do model
4 Yeah, in theory, if I'm still around.
Get it done.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Have you run into any problems getting the bandwidth from the other ISPs?
No, not yet. Like I say, I'm only running a very small amount. So I'm only doing, I've got gig connections, but they're only very small commits. The UK is very well connected. Some of our DCs will have tens, if not hundreds of ISPs available for interconnect. And again, if I get into the IXP eventually, then there'll be an awful lot more options for me. But bandwidth isn't too expensive, but it is expensive enough that I can't be running gig connections with no money coming in. Kind of, hence the non-profit side of things. It is actually a non-profit company. It's not just not making any money. I can't, with no money coming in at the moment, I can't run 100 meg or gig Tor servers at the moment. Yes, sir.
I missed the first part of the talk, so I apologize to mentioning this. Do you anticipate, if this is wildly successful, do you anticipate problems with Tor scaling? And if so, like, what's your plan for dealing with that?
Bit of a weird one. I'm not suggesting, it's a bit of a strange thing to spend all this money and all this effort and come and tell people about it. I'm not suggesting that this is a good idea. Because if you say, hello, I would like a special internet connection that no one can spy on, then you're going to get a great big red flag, I expect. You shouldn't do. It should be perfectly acceptable for you to have an ISP that respects your privacy and doesn't want to surveil you and doesn't want to be able to store records on you, and that should be a perfectly fine thing to do. But I'm one person who's rapidly running out of savings. So you shouldn't... I would hope that if this is successful, it would be places like refuge shelters or libraries and things like that that will take it on. Places that people can visit anonymously or where they need anonymity, they can come here and the building itself can't spy on them, I can't spy on them and stuff like that. Did you manage to see the State of the Onion talk yesterday?
No.
So Tor mentioned they have 200 gigabits of capacity. They're currently using about 75 of that. So I can't imagine that I'm going to even be a blip in the ocean of their spare capacity. Anybody else? Oh, yes, sorry.
I'm part of the community mesh network in Poland, and we are running a VPN to kind of protect all people who carry an internet connection to the mesh. So we started getting a lot of DMCA complaints, which is, I don't know if you have deals with something similar in the UK, but they all seem like they're automated, but some of them are XML, but some of them don't. And I guess I'm wondering if you or anyone else have these systems for automatically responding to these, because
okay, so the question is, do I have a system, or does anybody else in the room have a system for dealing with DMCA requests? I do have a system for dealing with DMCA requests. I reply back, haha, Yeah, it's the UK. It is interesting, and like, as I mentioned in one of my other slides, it is annoying when UK companies respond to DMCA requests and shut people's blogs down or VPSs and things. But short of a UK court order, I do not care. So is there anybody else? I think you put your hand up.
So yeah, so I work for an ISP, and we get about 6,000 requests a day. There's an application called Abuse.io, which basically takes all that XML and smashes it against your IP space, so you can be like, these guys are all fuckers. and then, if you are a large ISP, which you are not, you may have signed for, so MPAA went after Comcast and basically went, you're facilitating piracy, tisk tisk, give us money. And Comcast said, here you go, stop bothering us. So it's there's an agreement. Some large ISPs have signed an agreement, a contract, to deliver messages. Some ISPs basically take down notices to end customers. That means emailing to the customer, you know, your Comcast.com address that you all have and check regularly, right? But there's really no teeth to it other than notifications, and it's like seven strikes, and then they're supposed to disconnect the internet. If you're a small ISP, it's, the consequences are fairly small because you don't have the facilities to contact those customers. So what do you do? Okay. And you can talk to your legal counsel, but you may have a circle of violence. But there's a great, abuse.io is a great thing.
Yeah, so if you do have to worry about DMCA requests, then abuse.io is the thing. Good. I think I have a couple of minutes left, but any last questions? No? Cool. Right, well, thank you very much, everyone.